Welcome to Today on Broadway for Tuesday, July 5th, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway stars James Marino.
We hope that everyone out there in Broadway radio land had a great 4th of July celebrating America's independence and hopefully not drunkenly setting fire to your neighbor's roof with an errant firework or anything like that. Too close to home, James? Did you?
I have neighbors who have no appreciation for visual beauty, just like things that go boom. Oh, it's crazy.
All right, and hopefully they don't listen to this podcast.
I'm pretty sure they don't.
Okay. So,
all right, what do we got going?
Well, over the past 4 or 5 days, we've released some really cool podcast episodes that I know we both wanted to get out there. The first was the newest episode of Michael Portantier's Sound of Musicals. James, you were a part of that recording, so could you give everyone a real quick synopsis of what is part of that episode this week?
Oh, so Michael had an interview with Christine Andreas and talked about the various cast recordings and productions that she's been involved with. And it was a really fascinating interview, lots of great music in there. So if you're a fan of Christine and some of the other shows that she's been in, please jump over and download Sound of Musicals because it's a really fun hour.
Very good. Yeah, that show's become one of my favorites. Michael does a great job at kind of telling the story of different cast albums, whether it's in different versions of the same show or kind of talking about the inner workings or reviewing some. He does a really great job with that. And then on yesterday's episode of Today on Broadway, you interviewed the director of the Ellis Island site-specific ragtime concert that we talked about maybe last week or the week before.
Yeah, Sammy Kenold. I interviewed Sammy about her involvement in ragtime and all different site-specific theater. She's actually directing and has directed before a production of Violet on a Bus, which is really fascinating. And Sammy is also working on The Great Comet that's coming to Broadway soon. So,
awesome.
Take a listen to that interview. It's about 15 minutes. A lot of fun.
Very cool. And before we got into the normal reviews and news section of this week on Broadway on Sunday with you, me, and Peter Felicia, you had an interview with a photographer who took pictures of amazing playwrights over like 3 decades and finally put them into a book. And she talked about that book and maybe turning it into a Broadway show and coming to the Signature Theater and all that stuff. So that interview was really great. And I was sorry that Peter and I weren't invited to be a part of it, but whatever, no hard feelings. I understand.
I think if you checked your email, you were invited, but you were busy otherwise.
Yeah, whatever.
Susan Johann is the name of the photographer and author that put this book together called Focus on Playwrights, and it is available at the Drama Bookstore, the Drama Bookshop, I should say. It keeps on saying store. And it's a really fascinating, wonderful book, amazing. I mean, pictures of George Abbott when he's 104 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, just check it out.
And I really liked the part of the conversation that you guys got into about the fact that she used the same film over 30 years. Like she started with one type of film, and then the progression of the format the photography took over those 3 decades to where she used digital as a backup, but she kept the film in her freezer to make sure that it was preserved enough that she could shoot on that film up until the last photos were taken a year or so ago whenever she finished this up. So that was really cool. So I really enjoyed that. So congratulations on that.
That was a lot of fun. Thanks so much. Let's get into the news. So Imelda Staunton, the Gypsy, is eyeing a 2018 Broadway bow.
Yeah, James, this is one of Broadway's most poorly kept secrets, as we've been talking about it for a while on this show. But late last week, Boz Bomaboy from London's Daily Mail reported that, this is a quote, plans are well advanced, but as yet not confirmed, for the Olivier-winning production of Gypsy, led by Imelda Staunton, to come to New York in 2018. On this side of the pond, the rumors are at the fevered pitch that it will be landing at Roundabout. So we can expect probably a limited run of Gypsy in Roundabout's next season or the season after that. In the meantime, Bomaboy reports that Staunton is in discussions to play Martha in a London revival of Edward Albee's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Martha to Rose, that makes sense to me. And going back to this week on Broadway, Peter mentioned a regional production of Gypsy that he saw starring, who was it? Was it Karen Ziemba.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He talked about, even though it's closed already, he talked about how great it was. And he talked about, even though everybody feel in the theater community feels like, oh, we've seen Gypsy. It happens all the time. We see it on Broadway with Patti LuPone, Tyne Daly, you know, Bernadette Peters. It happens. There are people who haven't seen it. So I think, because it is one of those perfect musicals, and we talked about that again, anytime people can see it with a talented actress in that lead role, yeah, that's good for them.
Yeah, that was Gypsy up at the Sharon Playhouse in Connecticut with Karen Ziemba. All right, so Andrew Lloyd Webber versus the Kardashians.
Yes, that's pronounced correctly. Congratulations. James, this is a story that was out there last week, and we didn't really talk about it because, frankly, with the live stream and like 72 Broadway shows being announced last week, there was just a few more important things to get to. But there were some interesting developments since we last recorded an episode of Today on Broadway, so I wanted to get into it a little bit and get your opinion on it. So for some background, apparently there is a new off-Broadway show called Kardashians Break the Musical. Yeah, I know. That originally, in the original version, used music or parodied music of Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical Cats in order to lampoon the, I guess, reality show famous Kardashian family. Well, a week or so ago, there was word that Andrew Lloyd Webber's lawyers had issued a cease and desist letter to the musical, accusing them of using the songs not to parody the musical Cats, which would be an acceptable use in the parody statutes, but to parody the Kardashians, which would not be acceptable. Last week, after the producers of Kardashians agreed to remove the offending music, the Right Honorable the Lord Andrew Lloyd Webber told the New York Post's Michael Riedel that he did not sic his lawyers on the feline interlopers out of spite, but it was to honor a legally binding agreement with the widow of poet T.S. Eliot, whose poems served as the original musical's inspiration. Lloyd Webber said that he, quote, normally turns a blind eye to this sort of thing, but that the agreement with Eliot's widow and his estate says that his work cannot be used, quote, in a parody or in a way that could bring his poems in disrepute. ALW continued, so even if I loved Kardashians, I am legally obligated to protect his work. Now, James, that all sounds well and good and official and legal and all that stuff. But if memory serves, and it does because I looked it up, there have been numerous forbidden Broadway parodies of Cats. So without having seen Kardashians, although I am dying for Peter Felicia to review Kardashians, does this sound like a cop-out to you? Or is this somehow different based on what they said about it? Like, they're not parodying Cats, they're using Cats to parody the Kardashians.
So, Matt, do you think if I signed an agreement with you that said the New York Yankees could never win another World Series, you'd be able to enforce that?
I really wish I could.
Hey.
Sorry.
So I think that, you know, Andrew Lloyd Webber can sign anything he wants with the Eliot estate. You know, he can't prevent United States laws of fair use and parody. So it seems like there's more to this than what we're hearing officially from Andrew Lloyd Webber, but I think the best plan out there is ignore it and it'll go away, you know. But right now, giving it a lot of press, you know, filing a lawsuit and giving it press time is just, you know, adding fuel to the fire. That's a shame. Well,
yeah, and it also, considering the fact that Cats is coming back to Broadway in like a week, that I guess that kind of makes a little more sense as to where they don't want to, you know, confuse the ticket buying public, I guess, although I don't think there's any chance of that. But to be honest with you, now, James, I don't know if you're big into the world of professional wrestling, but there was a time in my life when I was known to body slam somebody and throw a vertical suplex down. But this kind of seems, in the world of pro wrestling, there's something called a work where it seems like everybody's in on this thing that's going to look like it's confrontational, but it's really benefiting everybody. And it just seems to me like this is a work where, why would he care? He's Andrew Lloyd Webber. Cats is going to make a bajillion dollars on Broadway again, I'm sure. And why this little off-Broadway musical that very few people would have heard of had he not brought attention to it? It just seems like it's, you know, one paw petting another paw, you know, for mutual benefit.
We keep seeing these little stories about Cats. You know, we about the Cats protest a few months ago, and various different little things keep on popping up. I feel like there's a guerrilla marketing effort out there.
Yeah.
All right, let's do the charitable news roundup.
Yeah, there have been a few stories about some theatrically related charitable donations that have come up over the past week. And I think coming off of the Independence holiday, it's important that we kind of get into these and touch on them real quickly. The first is that last week, the Schubert Foundation announced the 506, that's 506 not-for-profit performing arts organizations from across the country that would be receiving a share of $25.6 million in grants this year, ranging from $10,000 to $325,000. The grants benefit a broad spectrum of arts organizations, from large to small, covering a wide range of locations around the country, from urban to rural. The Schubert Foundation is especially interested in providing support to professional resident theater and dance companies that develop and produce new American work. So that's great. I know many, many regional theaters in my different travels and where different cities that I've lived that benefit from the Schubert Foundation. So congratulations to all of these deserving organizations that received Schubert grants this year. And congratulations to the Schubert Foundation, really, you know, making a substantial mark, not only on the Broadway community, but in the arts community around the country as well.
Yeah, that's really amazing. I wonder, you know, when you buy a ticket to a show that's in a Schubert theater, not just the Schubert Theater,
right?
You know, some of that ticket price goes to the Schubert Foundation, which goes into these grants. I wonder if we can write off any of our tickets as a charitable donation.
I doubt it.
Check your accountant.
Yeah, I'll talk to my accountant about that. I'll get back to you.
All right. Ronald Perlman donates $75 million for the World Trade Center Arts Complex.
Yeah, on a similar topic to the Schubert donations or the Schubert grants, last week, billionaire Ronald O. Perlman, the former chairman of Carnegie Hall, announced that he was donating $75 million to revive plans to build a performing arts center at the World Trade Center site. The project has been long stalled, dating back to the original plans for that facility back in 2003. But with this donation, the plans quickly got back on track, and it was announced that the theater and the performing arts facility would be named after Perlman. The New York Times has a really interesting look at not only this project and its evolution throughout the years, dating back to some work done with Michael Bloomberg, but also on how wealthy donors are making massive contributions to New York City's cultural community and the infrastructure and the facilities that house the cultural organizations in the city. We'll have a link in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com if you want to check out the entire article. But, you know, everything from, you know, David Geffen to different people helping refurbish theaters and facilities across the city. It's really interesting to see how it seems like that uber 1% wealthy folks are making an investment in the arts community in New York. And for whatever, maybe it is tax donation purposes, like you mentioned before, James. But if we all benefit, it's tough for me to get upset about that.
I tell you, it's very difficult for my liberal friends and me, in fact, to get up to Lincoln Center to see the David Koch, you know, theaters up there, the Koch brothers, who are self-described libertarian conservatives, but make a tremendous donation to the arts community in New York, insofar as dollar-wise. All right, New York City to provide 1,000 free Broadway tickets to low-income families.
Yeah, this is another cool story in that same vein. In celebration of the 50th anniversary of the New York City Mayor's Office of Film, Television, and Broadcasting, the city will be launching Access Broadway, a program that will provide 1,000 free tickets to family-friendly Broadway shows for low-income New Yorkers over the next year. The Mayor's Office of Media and Entertainment has partnered with the New York City Housing Authority and members of the Broadway League to provide 100 tickets per month to qualifying residents for 10 Broadway shows during the coming year. Other anniversary initiatives include Broadway in the Boroughs, which will bring free stage performances to each borough throughout this summer, 50 for 50, which will present 50 free public events throughout the year in New York City, Movie Matinees, which will give over 1,000 free matinee tickets to low-income families in the month of August, as well as a number of other programs that'll happen in celebration of this 50th anniversary. We'll have a full list and information in the show notes, but again, you know, whether it's these huge donations to theaters around the country or huge donation to build a performing arts center in an important landmark in New York City, or these small donations to low-income families, anything that can expand the reach, the performing arts, and in my mind, not only helps just in terms of, you know, having something fun to do, but it helps enrich the lives of people that might not have the opportunity to do the things that, James, that you and I do on a regular basis and even take for granted. So all of these stories together, while they are vastly different in the types of donations that are being made, I'm glad that there are organizations and individuals out there constantly and consistently contributing to the expansion of the arts community in the United States. God bless America.
Excellent. I just hope that, you know, that this continues to be an ongoing thing and not just a trend because the Hamiltons out there have done this. Do you know if the City of New York has done this in the past?
They've announced that this was specifically in recognition of the 50th anniversary of the New York City Mayor's Office of Film, Television, and or Film, Theater, and Broadcasting. So I don't know that they've done this specific thing in other years since this is the anniversary, but I would imagine that that office has done other things in the past. If you listeners know of anything that they've done similar in the past, let us know, because I appreciate them riding the wave of EduHam and Ham for Ham and all those stuff. I hope that this is something that they're engaging in on a regular basis and continually on an annual basis.
All right. Alexandra Silber from Fiddler is going to publish a novel called After Anatevka.
Yeah. Alexandra Silber is a great follow on Twitter, first off. But before she was cast as Zeidel in the most recent Broadway revival of Fiddler on the Roof, she spent 2 years playing the character's younger sister, Hoddle, in London. While there, she started imagining what happened to the character after she left Anatevka to follow Perchik to Siberia. As she was imagining those things, she decided to write a book. And after she finished the book, she kind of put it away and went to work on some off-Broadway shows, some regional shows. She was part of that now somewhat legendary West Side Story from the San Francisco Symphony with Cheyenne Jackson. And she did all that before returning to Fiddler again last year. It was at that point that she decided to see if there could be a future life for this novel that she just kind of shelved for a couple years. The book picks up where Fiddler leaves off, and in addition to drawing inspiration from the musical, she also gets information from the original Yiddish stories by Shalom Aleichem. Silber, whose family was Russian shtetl Jews, sold the book to Pegasus Publishing last week as part of a two-book deal, along with White Hot Grief Parade, a memoir about losing her father to cancer when she was 18. I've never seen Silber perform, but she's become one of my favorite people to follow on social media because she's just filled with so much joy about what she's doing and seems like a really intelligent, insightful, and caring person. So I'm really excited to see what these books turn out to, and I will be one who will be pre-ordering both as soon as that information is available.
Great. We should see if we can get her on one of the shows to talk about these.
That's an even better idea than what I said.
All right. In sort of technology and theater news, Apple patents technology to prevent performance recording.
Yeah, okay, James, this is one that I'm really interested to get your take on. Last week, CBS News reported that rather than simply spending all of their time and money changing the size of the exact same iPhone for year after year, Apple has patented technology that will send an infrared emitter to temporarily disable the recording function on phones. The technology is designed specifically for theater and concert venues to kind of prevent people from taking pictures or recording video during performances. And given the recent rash of cell phone related issues on Broadway, this could be really interesting technology for theater owners and production companies and all those types of things. But James, as someone who lives and works at the intersection of theater and technology, what are some of the things that we're not thinking about, some of the drawbacks, the limitations that this tech could present that the normal theater goer might not understand or think of when they're talking about something like this?
Well, the problem with it is that it's proprietary and it's Apple, and I'm an Apple evangelist. We're talking on Macintoshes right now. I have iPhones, I have iPads, I own Apple stock. I'm a big Apple fanboy, but in this case, I think that, you know, just like other technologies like iMessage, which is a text messaging app for Apple, it's not as big as it could be because Apple promised to make it an open platform where Android could use it, and it's not possible right now for Android to use iMessage. So it splits the platform. Now, whether theaters are going to purchase this infrared system or other venues will purchase it, it'll only block Apple-related technology right now if this new technology is put into the newest iPhones. But it's not going to block older iPhones, and it's not going to block Android devices or other types of things. So it's a good concept. And I, you know, again, I don't really know if there's a ton of problems here. It's like the Republicans talking about the need for voting laws. You know, the need for voting laws, yeah, when, you know, there's very, very little voter fraud. There's very, very little, you know, videotaping and photographing illegally that can't be dealt with in a non-technology way. But we'll see what happens. You know, if Apple rolls this out and they say to theater owners, for only $100,000 you could do it, how many theaters are going to jump up and do that?
Well, first off, from the political standpoint, I think there's actually more issues with recording and photographs than there is a voter fraud, but that's another story. But we were talking before we started recording that even though I think a lot of the people in the creative community are Apple apologists like you are, when it comes down to stats, Apple is just a very small fraction of the cell phone market in the United States.
Worldwide, yeah. I mean,
well, yeah.
In the U.S., Apple is, one out of every four devices sold is an iPhone type of device insofar as phones go. So you still have 75% of the market that's Android, and as you get worldwide, it becomes even smaller because Apple is much more expensive than Android devices. So, I don't know if this is the solution unless Apple open sources the technology, which Apple has never done. That I can think of off the top of my head. They said that they were going to do that, but they haven't in a number of cases. So I don't know if this type of technology is a defensive technology, that they patented this never to actually implement it or use it just so that nobody else could do it. So we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah. All right. I saw the Steve Jobs movie, so I know all about that, not wanting to give people access. I'm just as knowledgeable on this subject as you are.
No. All right. So it's a shame that Nerds never came to Broadway because we could have tied.
Damn it.
Yeah. All right. Why don't you get us out of here?
Okay. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt. And subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thank you for spending your Tuesday. I'm sorry that you're back to work. Maybe you're on vacation this week, but if you are, please listen to us tomorrow because we will be back to you on Wednesday.